The full Will Chase experience. I love it.
The following is a production by Cutting to the Chase Podcast.
Nice to be in orbit.
Jeff Young, what's up? So I had to remember the last time we've chatted for real. I mean, we chat every day about nonsense, but in terms of actual baseball conversation, I was thinking it had been like a year or two, and then I forgot we talked at the beginning of this year, literally right inside the new year.
We did. I can't say I remember that, but yeah. I'm sure we did. I'm pretty sure you're not making it up. I know you make up some things, but that feels like something we would have done. We talk baseball every now and again, so
yeah,
good to be back. Good to chat baseball with you as always.
Yeah, definitely. Good to chat. And yeah, I think we had talked right after Steven Rizzotto and I talked in December, and then we chatted, obviously. Because I do remember we were talking about Jordan Hicks, and I remember Hicks.
That's
I remember
right.
Hicks, he must have seen the stream or something.
He
we didn't
did.
Tag him. But yeah, he was kind of a fan, I guess. But anyways, before we get into like the real meaty baseball stuff here on September 21st, 2024, how have things been? What have you been up to? Just doing your thing, I guess. I see you on Twitter posting, you know, you're like a newsworthy follow. You're on top of the Giant stuff across the board. So
yeah, I mean, things are going well. We're just nothing really new is going on. We have working on a podcast with a guy named Brooks Knudsen. So we've put out a few episodes here and there. We started that, I think, in May. We took over a pre-existing podcast, so it's not like something we had to build from the ground up. So I mean, I think that means we're competitors now.
Yeah, that's right. I think so. Well, you know what? I'm an independent contractor, so yeah. I mean, I'm everybody's competitor, I guess. And really, it's more like I'm everybody's ally. Or, you know, I that's why I'm reaching out to the people that are quote unquote in that business or tapped in or whatever. You're pretty tapped in. You're on the radio pretty often. Have you been on the radio in the last few weeks or so?
Yeah, I think the last time I was on one is about 2 weeks ago. It was a Friday night, I think. I'm blanking on that. I often do post game interviews at night, which is it's always tough to stay up. I'm like literally minutes away from falling asleep when I'm doing those interviews. Like as soon as it's over with, I just go straight to bed. So it's fun. I love talking about baseball. I like the engagement and all that stuff. I like just being able to chat with people and be, you know, a voice that people, you know, maybe depend on. I'm not sure if that's the right word, but, always just great to chat baseball with people, and, being on the radio is a fun experience.
You've been doing the radio stuff now for a couple of years. You talked with Dieter a lot, Dieter Kurtenbach.
Yeah.
Have you talked with him lately?
I haven't heard Dieter on the radio. He may be on the radio. I just haven't been listening all that much because the time I get to listen is at night. And I've just been listening to music when I take my dog out for a walk right after work. And when I cook dinner, I've just been listening to music more than watching the Giants games, because that's more entertaining, right?
yeah. I mean, yeah, sometimes you just got to get away from it. You got to wind down, get away from the what's supposed to be fun, but you got to get away from it sometimes. But yeah, the Giants, we'll get into the San Francisco Giants.
Sure.
So better than the New York Giants, I guess, but
not by much. I don't even know if the New York Giants are doing anything, but I can't imagine if they're better. It's got to be like a small difference.
Well, they haven't won a game yet. So in baseball terms, I mean, you know, it's early on the Giants, the New York Giants side of things. For the San Francisco Giants, so they're basically headed for another season of basically another offseason without the playoffs and another under 500, you know, unless they get crazy here in the last week. But it looks like they're going to finish under 500. I would assume. I was actually trying to, I was going back right before we started to see if I couldn't remember if I'd asked you for your specific predictions or not going into the season, but I don't know. But I don't think we really got into that, or if we did, I kind of know what the answer would have been. It would have been at the very best some kind of wild card run, because I know you said they weren't going to go through the NL West, not with the way we thought the Dodgers were going to be. And the Dodgers are going to probably win the West, but they're not doing it in the way that we probably would have assumed. They're not exactly running away with it as good as they still are. But yeah, I mean, I would assume that most expectations for Giants fans heading into 2024 was at best maybe like a 10 win swing the other way, as far as maybe, you know, 86 wins or mid 80s and, you know, contending for one of those three wildcard spots. And instead, like we said, they're under 500 as the final week here approaches. And it's just more or less the same, I guess, right? As far as the Giants and underachieving or just being a meh team. So what has been your takeaway from the 2024 season?
Yeah, I mean, I have a lot of thoughts about this, but definitely running in place is the phrase I use a lot when talking about this Giants team, because it's the third straight year in which they really had some type of playoff expectation and they just really disappointed for one reason or another. This year they're going to finish under 500 again. They had 78 wins last year, so they're going to be challenged to even get to 78 wins this year. They're at 75 right now. It's not impossible, but it's going to be tough. And, you know, I think going into the season at best, I think I was looking at maybe 85 wins, but I don't know. I just, there was something that happened early on where I was like, oh man, this is just not clicking for one reason or another. There was like a Blake Snell start against the Washington Nationals. And again, the Giants struggles go far beyond one player. And this is not to say Blake Snell was a part of it, but there was like a Blake Snell start early in the year where against the Nationals, where I'm like, he's going to mow this team down. I mean, this is a team that strikes out a lot. It's a young team. And he ended up struggling through like two or three innings before getting pulled and losing to the Nationals, because the Nationals, for one reason or another, they play well against the Giants. They have for the past couple of years, despite being a rebuilding team. But it was really at that point where I was like, something's not clicking with this team. You know, they're inconsistent, and inconsistent teams have always been, to me, they're either inconsistently in the middle or they're inconsistently bad. Like, you don't really see an inconsistent 90 win team, you know, or anything like that. So that was like the sign that things were not going to go well this year. And they just really couldn't find any momentum this year. I mean, they had a stretch in May where they had a bunch of weird kind of come from behind wins. And, you know, that was something to build off of. And then they had a really, they had a pretty decent August. I think they went like 14 and 13 or something like that, which is good enough. But when you start looking at the teams that they played, it's like, well, they played the Rockies, they played the Marlins, they played the White Sox. Like, these are not teams that, like, you need to win against these teams, yeah, but you need to do better against a weak schedule like they had in August. And then by the time September rolled around, and I'm sorry, this is kind of a long-winded answer, but by the time September rolled around, I was like, they need to have at least, they need to be five games above 500 to even have a chance given the teams that they're playing in September. And that included the Diamondbacks, the Padres, the Orioles, the Royals. These were all playoff bound teams. And they didn't get to that mark. And things just went, once September 1st hit, things just, like, you knew by then this team had no chance. But, like, they never really played like a playoff team this year. So I don't know. You know, there's plenty of fault to go around. It's an organizational failure. The Giants are going to look pretty heavily at Franzetti in the front office to see if there's a change that needs to be made. He's been in charge for 6 years. And, you know, I think the ownership group is satisfied with the fact that ticket sales have been up this year. They're averaging about 3,000 more fans per game than they were last year. So that's something that the front office can hang its hat on. But on the other hand, 6 years and still kind of the same results. They have enough information to make a decision. And I think, you know, these next few weeks are going to be pretty interesting for that. There's a case to be made to move on and look for a new head of the front office. There's plenty of evidence to support that case. There's a much weaker case to keep them and just hope for better results next year and really I mean, if they go down that path, they really need to be 100% certain that this is going to be the guy that leads them to the playoffs again. Because if it's another missed opportunity, another bad season, it's just going to be like it's going to be a wasted opportunity, as I see it.
Isn't Farhan Zaidi signed through, is it 26?
So there is some language in his contract, as this is something that he specifically clarified a couple of weeks ago. It was believed at one point when they introduced Bob Melvin that he was going to agree to a 3-year extension. And that's somewhat true. I think he's guaranteed through 2025, and then it's like a team option for 2026.
Okay.
So he is, in theory, I mean, he could be under contract through 2026, but really 2025 is going to be the year in which they need to commit. They need to decide whether, like, you don't want a front office being in a lame duck season. That's always tough to operate. So I think by the end of next year, they're going to decide whether to A, go in another direction if they don't do that beforehand, or B, extend him for a couple more years.
Yeah, I mean, you said it. The Giants have been basically a more or less a 500 type of a team for what seems like forever at this point, the last, what, 6 years? I was looking at it earlier and not really including this year, but just heading into this season. The Giants were 373, 335 under the Farhan Zaidi regime between 19 and 23. And of course, like we said, headed to another under 500 season. I mean, it's still weird looking at, was it 2021, the 107 win outlier, just nowhere. I mean,
Yeah.
they're just mediocre before that. Blow up. They had, I think, what was it, like a million comeback wins and just all the luck going their way. And then back to being a 500 or worse team. And I think, you know, I think probably in addition, at least, to Zaidi, we were looking at Gabe Kapler, and you know, it was kind of hard to maybe judge at times how good or bad he was based on the roster or the team and blah blah blah. And Farhan Zaidi, I mean, he's the one that's in charge of it ultimately. And you know, their general manager, Pete Pitella, so he's been there since 2023. So, I mean, what's the vibe on him specifically? I know Zaidi is the guy we hear about, it seems like, or at least
Yeah.
nationally, you hear his name. It's kind of like with the Cubs with Jed Hoyer as the president. You don't even really hear about Carter Hawkins, the GM, very much, just like what was Theo, and you didn't really hear about Jed as much. So, you know, if Farhan Zaidi were to, you know, let's say he was let go at the end of the year, is Pete Pitella in danger? Because, you know, a new president of baseball ops might want his own guy anyway. How much control, I guess, does Pete Pitella have as the GM as far as the moves? And he's only been there since last, you know, 2023, but, you know, what's his future? What's the outlook on him right now?
Yeah, I mean, it's always hard to tell because it's like, you know, when a team is struggling, when an offense is struggling, it's like fire the hitting coach, and it's like, does that make any difference?
Yeah.
Maybe it does. I don't know. But with Pete Pitella, he had a player development background with Houston Astros. He was an assistant general manager there for quite a few years and pretty well regarded. I know he's pretty well regarded throughout baseball. So if the Giants happen to move in a different direction and he wasn't retained, I have pretty confident that he would,
He'd be fine.
find a new job pretty quickly. As I mean, it would probably be a lateral move as a general manager. But there's been some positives on the player development side over the past couple of years with him in charge, especially on the pitching side. It hasn't really, it hasn't materialized to the major league roster yet. But when you look at the minors, there's certainly been, some guys who have benefited, and it's always hard to tell, like, are they benefiting naturally, or is there something that Pete Pitella is like feeding them? Is he feeding them information that to aid their development? I think there's the hope and belief that that's happening with some guys. I mean, you look at a guy like Bryce Eldridge, who was a first round pick last year, and he's already in AAA despite being 19 years old. So is that a function of just the raw talent that he has, or is it a function of something that Pete Pitella has, aided with? It's always hard to tell, but he's been in baseball for a long time despite being relatively young. Maybe he gets a look as the president of baseball operations. I'm not really sure. I don't really have a feel there. I don't really have a feel as to whether the Giants are going to move on from Farhan Zaidi at this point. I mean, I kind of feel like if they were going to, they probably would have made that decision already, but it's always hard to sell.
Yeah, you know, Pipitella is, let's see, Pipitella is, I think, 34 years old. So he's basically, we should be the GM of a team at this point. We're the same, more or less the same age.
It's like,
yeah, I saw that Astros background, and you know, they've been kind of the model franchise for the last several years. And so it seems like anyone that comes off that tree, more or less, is probably going to be fine. I mean, unless you're, Jeff Flynhow, who, I think if you're coming off the Astros tree, you're probably going to be fine. Even the current Tigers manager, AJ Hinch, I mean, he's got his Tigers almost in the playoffs at this point, but I think Jeff Flynhow is doing something else, not in baseball, but, something in sports, I think. Anyway, this was the first year under new manager Bob Melvin. And so wasn't it weird when the Padres decided, yeah, we're going to let him go to a division rival? I think most people thought the Padres were going to take a step back since they lost Juan Soto in the trade with the Yankees. And their owner passed away at the beginning of the year. And it just seemed like their window was kind of slamming shut. If anything, they look better than ever. What's been the vibe for Melvin? I mean, again, it's maybe tough to grade as far as what the roster might be and stuff like that, but there's probably been some critics about him specifically, right?
Sure. And, it's hard to ignore the contrast between what's happening with the Padres this year, not just getting rid of Juan Soto, but it's an inferior roster compared to last year. Like, Blake Snell was part of that rotation. Seth Lugo, who is an all-star in the AL, Michael Wacha, Nick Martinez, these guys were all good pitchers. Like, they had an entire quality pitching staff pretty much leaving free agency, which is pretty incredible. On top of trading Juan Soto, they got Michael King in return for Soto, and King's looked the part. They also added Dylan Cease, so they did augment the rotation to some regard, but they, you know, the lineup was going to be weaker without Soto. There's really no question about that. But then you see a guy like Jackson Merrill come up, and it's like, man, the Padres just have an eye for talent. So the contrast is hard because, like, Melvin underperformed with a very talented roster last year, and it's fair to say his team has underperformed this year as well. The Giants invested $250 million against the competitive balance tax this year. So they're gonna pay a tax on top of, for crossing the $237 million CBT threshold. So with that, I mean, ownership has to be disappointed with the return on investment. Investing $250 million and getting, under 80 wins is a massive disappointment all around. It's hard to really blame one person or another. There's certainly been some, with Melvin, some level of, like, I'm trying to think of the right phrase to describe this. He's an old school manager and manages in an old school way. And there's a lot of, like, lineup continuity. There's a lot of, not necessarily trust in younger players, which is a shame. I don't know if that's actually the case. I mean, the younger players the Giants have, they have to perform when they get a chance to play. And, for some that's happened, for others that hasn't happened. And there's also been some interesting, in-game decisions, especially when it comes to the bullpen using some guys. But, at the end of the day, you can only use the guys that are given to you. So if it's like, if your bullpen's not good, it doesn't matter how good of a bullpen manager you are. You could be the best bullpen manager in baseball, but if you don't have the right personnel, you're going to fall flat there. I think the Giants value his ability to recruit in free agency. And I think that's really, the biggest impact that he's made, or that they hope that he makes. And they also value, just the communication. There's something there that was missing with Gabe Kapler and communicating with his players. That's perhaps present with Bob Melvin. I think the biggest difference between the two is that Gabe Kapler had a young, experimental coaching staff. And a lot of these guys all found jobs right afterwards. You see guys like Kai Correa go to the Cleveland Guardians. You see guys like Anton Richardson. He's a first base coach for the New York Mets. I know I'm missing a bunch of guys here. But I think there's been a pretty noticeable step back in terms of coaching and development on a major league roster. They had a couple of guys, Brian Bannister and Andrew Bailey, leave last year. They were involved heavily on the pitching development side, and that just hasn't been replaced this year. So to me, that's kind of the biggest difference that I see between Melvin and Kapler. I think their in-game management both has flaws and cons and pros and cons to it. I don't know if one is really better than the other when it comes to how they manage in a game, how they manage the lineups. I think Melvin goes with more stability than Kapler did. The Giants kind of wanted to get more of that, and this is kind of the result.
So Jung-Hoo Lee was the outfielder that they acquired in the offseason and gave him a nice contract, but he got hurt in May. So I think there were questions anyway as to kind of what he was going to be able to do offensively in the majors in that ballpark in San Francisco. And what did you see from him, at least in the early going? I mean, you know, the small sample size, obviously, after getting hurt and not seeing him, you know, since May. But I don't know how many wins this team might have otherwise, or, you know, maybe a few, maybe one or two. I don't know, but probably not that much of a swing. But what did you see from him in the early going, and what are you looking forward to seeing from him next year as he, you know, comes back off the injury?
Yeah, I think first and foremost, you know, the hope is that he stays healthy. He missed time this year, obviously, with the season ending shoulder injury. He also missed time in the KBO last year. I think he's just, you might have to check me on this, but I think he sustained like an ankle injury that kept him out for much or most of the season. So I think that the goal is just to stay healthy first and foremost. Lee, you know, on the defensive side, you know, it was always going to be tough adjusting to Oracle Park. I think he, you know, struggled a little bit early on. There were a couple of plays and I'm like, where I was like, man, that's a play that a center fielder has to make in the majors. But by the end of his time with the, you know, but you know, he kind of improved as the season progressed defensively. Offensively is where the question really lies, because there were questions about whether he could handle velocity. You know, in the KBO, you don't often face, you know, pitchers who throw more than 93 or 94. You know, there were questions as to whether his bat could adjust. He had a really high ground ball rate in the KBO, and that's something that you don't really want to see. In the majors, you want somebody to get a little more lift. He did show improvement in that regard. He had really good contact skills. Like, he rarely struck out. He rarely swung and missed. You know, he had a pretty good idea of the strike zone, made really good swing decisions. Overall, I think it's going to be, you know, it's he's going to have to hit for a little more power than he did this year. And granted, it was a very small sample. He was adjusting to major league pitching. But he was still a well below average player, offensively, in the time that he had this year. So I think there's the Giants hope that there's growth in his offensive skill set, hopefully a little more power. He did make some nice contact right into the defense, unfortunately. You know, he's not going to be a 20 home run hitter or anything like that, but he's got to be a gap to gap guy who can put some pressure on the defense with his speed. So I think there's a lot to take from this year, and there's a lot of development that's left that still needs to happen with Lee. And the Giants knew that going into this. He was only 25 this year, so he's not a finished product. But you know, there was some positives from this year, but there's also, you know, some opportunities for him to grow as well.
Yeah, he did have the ankle injury last year as well. So Blake Snell, we talked about him briefly. He, he threw his first career ninth inning pitch this year and his first career no-hitter August 2nd at the Reds. I think that's the best part about that is that, forget the no-hitter, it was his first ever ninth inning appearance. I mean, he had never gotten into the ninth inning or pitched, you know, in the ninth inning before that no-hitter on August 2nd at the Reds. So simply put, he has an opt-out, but he'll be opting out, right? I mean, he had a better second half. He kind of got off to a slow start and, you know, had the no hitter, had some really nice starts. And then he's had a couple weird ones, like the, I think he lasted like an inning a few weeks ago or last month against Arizona, wasn't it? Where he only got like 42 pitches in the first inning. They pulled him. So, you know, he's had a couple of short outings, but more or less has been the guy that you would have expected, right?
Oh, yeah. I think he's, you know, got off to a slow start. And that was probably due to the fact that he signed so late in the offseason.
Yeah.
He battled some injuries again. I don't know if that's because he didn't have a normal spring training. I think if the Giants could go back in time, they probably, you know, would have been more cautious with him coming and pitching so quickly, because he didn't pitch a single game during spring training for the Giants, not one inning. He signed late in the year, and I think he was pitching for the Giants by the second week of the season. I know he was throwing bullpens in simulated games. It's just not the same experience. You don't get the same feedback loop that you do, you know, throwing against major league hitters in spring training. Even if it is spring training, the results don't matter. It's still like the best feedback that you can get as a pitcher. So I think if the Giants could go back in time, they probably would have been a little more cautious and deliberate with him, you know, joining the Giants and say, hey, you know, we're happy that you're ready to pitch, but you need to do a natural progression build up from, you know, two innings to four innings to six innings, because I think he missed like one turn in the rotation to start the year, and he was pitching for the Giants after that. So, you know, he's done a really nice job. He's been awesome in the second half. He's probably been the best pitcher in the majors. I don't have that number in front of me. I think he has a 1.5 ERA in his last 13 starts, so very good, and a positive impression he's making. Right before free agency, he's going to opt out. There's little doubt about that. What the Giants do next is going to be interesting, because they have not had an appetite for signing pitchers who are in their 30s to long-term deals. They let Kevin Gausman walk, and that might prove to be the defining moment in Farhan Zaidi's tenure here. But they also let Carlos Rodon walk as well the season after that. And I think that was a much easier decision to digest from the fan base. It made more sense because Rodon just didn't have the durability track record or anything like that. I mean, he had two really strong seasons leading up to free agency and joining the Yankees, but I think there was still some concern as to whether it was a smart idea to sign him, you know, through his age 36 season or whatever it is. So with Snell, I think it's probably going to be more of the same. He's going to opt out. He's going to re-enter free agency. He should find more interest this year. I can't really say why he didn't find the interest that he had last year. Maybe it was the command issues. He won his second Cy Young, but he also led baseball in walks. And I think that's something that scares some teams off. And there's the fact that he's kind of a low volume pitcher. You know, he doesn't pitch deep into games all that often. I think he's corrected that narrative to some extent with the Giants, including, you know, making it into the ninth inning and pitching a no hitter against the Reds, because that's just been part of his track record is that he doesn't pitch deep into games. So my guess is he probably opts out and probably joins a different team. We'll see what happens. The Giants are going to be involved. I mean, they're one of the few big market clubs who can afford him. But, you know, he might make sense for a team like the Chicago Cubs. He might make sense for a team like the Yankees. Who knows? There's going to be interest out there again.
You know, I'm looking at Snell's game logs. And, yeah, he had a 0.75 ERA in July, 164 in August, and then 150 so far in September.
Yeah, he's been lights out.
He doesn't give up. He has not been giving up many earned runs. 7 last month, 2 so far this month, 2 in July, it looks like. And then, let's see. Because he had some of that injury. That's right. I remember that game against the Yankees now when I think he left that game injured and was out until, looks like, July. Came back against Toronto. I'm looking at his game log, so... So, yeah, really after that injury, he came back and he was just a new guy. He kind of refound himself. I mean, yeah, like you said, he's got a really good, you know, he's got the Cy Youngs and he's had a really good career, even, you know, taking into account the walks. And yeah, he'll probably opt out. I was looking at the pitchers that are going to be free agents and, you know, Max Scherzer, Justin Verlander are going to be most likely out there, but they're both in their 40s. Corbin Burns is going to be there most likely. You've got, was it Max Fried, I want to say, with Atlanta is going to be a free agent. So Blake Snell is arguably at least one of the top lefties. I mean, aside from being one of the probably top pitchers that could be available, but definitely one of the top lefties also. I think also, though, it was maybe the command issues, but also just what he was trying to get in free agency, you know, 100 plus million. I believe I know the Yanks were linked to him last offseason. And when they saw when we all saw what he ended up having to take, it was kind of like, OK, maybe it's a good thing that someone didn't give him what he was looking for. But maybe he'll get that now. So, yeah, we'll see what happens.
Yeah, I think there was something that was going on with like TV revenue deals. I could be wrong here. Yeah. But the deals weren't negotiated at, you know, it didn't come together as quickly as some teams had hoped. So you saw teams like the Rangers, who pretty much did nothing, despite winning the World Series last year. They let Jordan Montgomery, who is a workhorse for them,
yep,
in the postseason, they let him walk and they didn't really make a competitive offer, even though he seemed like, you know, it made a lot of sense for him to return to Texas. But there was something with the TV deals not coming together, and I'm not as in tune with that detail, but I think there was something there. So that's why free agency kind of played out slowly. And then I think some teams just decided to not play the Boris game and not wait until the last minute to sign a pitcher. You know, that's something that Boris tends to do. He waits out the market. He lets, you know, a bidding war kind of take place at the end for desperate teams. But I think teams were like, you know what, we're just going to sign somebody else instead.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I think Jordan Montgomery, didn't he fire Boris? I know, yeah, he was not happy with the way that thing all, you know, with the way that, and then with Snell, what kind of contract do you think Snell would end up getting if you had to guess, like 4 years and 75, 80, 90, maybe 100 million?
Yeah, that's always hard to say. Let's see, how old is he? So he's finishing his age 31 season.
Yeah.
I'd say maybe 5 years with some type of option for a sixth year. I'm going to guess 25 to 30 million AAV, average annual value. So if it's 5 years and 30 million per year, that puts, 150. That seems a little high. Maybe something closer to 27.5 million. That shaves off a few bucks. And then, you know, a team option for a sixth season with some type of buyout for like $5 million or something like that. I could see that. I haven't really thought about his market all that much, but it feels like he's probably going to end up getting the contract that he hoped to get last year.
Yeah.
But, you know, we'll see. I mean, Boris has a lot of clients again this year. You know, yep, he has Blake Snell, of course. He has Juan Soto. That's going to be a big deal. Corbin Burns is represented by Boris. There's a few other guys as well. I think Willie Adames. So, you know, I think that, you know, I think Snell hopefully will push for Boris to kind of drive, yeah, his market earlier in offseason. But yeah, kind of my guess is 5 years with an option for a sixth year, and then maybe 25 to 27.5 million average annual value.
So are the Giants, have they been scared off in terms of committing to starting pitching because of the Barry Zito deal?
I don't think that's a factor at all at this point. I mean, it's been nearly 20 years since that deal was signed. It didn't work out from the get-go. He was declining. If you, yeah, look at his numbers heading into free agency, he was declining before they even signed him. So they should have known what they were getting. Mm-hmm. I just think that, you know, this front office just doesn't like to make investments on pitchers who are in their 30s. You know, it bears mentioning that when a player reaches free agency, there's a good chance that regression, even if it's subtle, has already started taking place. So I think teams like the Giants, who are pretty risk adverse in some sense, they're risk adverse to dollars and years. They're not risk adverse when it comes to injury. Like if somebody has a high injury risk, it's like, sure, we'll take you on. But they're risk adverse to dollars and years. So, I mean, I just think like they don't want to have to deal with the regression years. They're trying to outsmart the market in some sense. That's why you see them sign guys like Carlos Rodon to 2 years and 44 million with an opt out, and Blake Snell 2 years, 62 million with an opt out after the first year. They're trying to outsmart the market in a sense that, you know, if the guy opts out, that's generally a sign that the team got really good value during that year. So I don't think the team is disappointed with the performance during that year, which is what we saw with Snell this year, he was quite good when he got healthy. And Carlos Rodon a couple of years ago, he was like a top five Cy Young contender that year with the Giants. I just don't think like they want to commit to a pitcher in their 30s, and they also don't want to commit and have that pitcher's regression be on their books. So it's like when you're looking at their, you know, it's not just a 5-year deal and $100 million. It's like, well, you're going to be paying this guy $20 million whether he's on the roster or not in 2029. And I think they're just like, we don't want to do that. We're going to try and make the contract a little more appealing so that we can avoid that. That's kind of my sense with how the Giants operate in free agency when it comes to pitchers.
Gerrit Cole also has an opt out, but let's be real. if he opts out, the Yankees can pick up the option that they have on him, team option, and basically just give him an extra year and he'll be back. He'll be back anyway. But Robbie Ray, I believe he also has an option to opt out. I don't think that's going to happen though, right? With the injuries, he's not going to get the money he still has currently owed to him if he leaves and tries to do something else.
Yeah, I could be wrong here. I think it's 2 years and $50 million that he has on the table, which is just a lot of money. And I thought this well before, like when the trade happened, like it's just a lot of money for a pitcher coming off of major elbow surgery to basically say, no, thank you, I'm going to test free agency. Because, you know, if you opt out, that means you're expecting to get more than $50 million guaranteed in free agency, which again, for a pitcher coming off of major elbow surgery in his 30s, that's going to be tough to do. He would have really needed to impress coming back from Tommy John surgery. And that just, you know, there's certainly been flashes. You know, he had a really good start against the Dodgers in his first start with the Giants. But it's been more, you know, kind of what you expect with a player coming off of Tommy John surgery. There's some good. The velocity is back. The strikeout numbers are healthy. So that's positive. But there's also just been some, you know, bad as well. His misses, you know, he just doesn't have the same sharpness that he had previous to the injury. Not yet. It usually takes at least a year for a pitcher to really get back to their pre-injury form if they do at all. And I think that's kind of where Robbie Ray is right now. He's not quite at his pre-injury form yet. So my guess is, you know, he said a couple of weeks ago that he's not going to, he hasn't really thought about it yet. My guess is he's, you know, he decides to opt in because that's just too much money to walk away from. And I think he'd be challenged to get $50+ million guaranteed in free agency.
Oh yeah. I guess you could say that trade worked out for both them in Seattle though, because Mitch Haniger hasn't done all that much either, right?
Yeah, it was, I think the Giants wouldn't have been too disappointed if he did opt out. The trade that they made was really just, you know, how do you want to like, it was basically a movement of 2024 money to spread it out over a couple more years, because like with Haniger now, I mean, he has an opt out after this year. He's certainly not going to exercise that. But they also traded Anthony DeSclafani. So the Giants traded about 60-ish million. Is that right? I could be wrong on that 50 million or so. They took in another $75 million. So it was a pretty, you know, they wanted to spread it out a little more. Most of that money that they traded was on the 2024 books. So I think they just tried to spread that money out a little more. I think that was the sense behind the deal. Both teams just kind of wanted to get out from under those contracts. The Giants weren't happy with how Mitch Haniger's 2023 season went. And, you know, he hasn't really been any better this year. DeSclafani, you know, I think he's made 12 starts since he signed a 3-year, $36 million deal with the Giants. And that's just been, you know, a pretty colossal disappointment there. He's, you know, he's been injured for most of it. So that's, you know, in fairness, he just hasn't been healthy. But I think both teams were just happy to get the money off the books and just kind of reshuffle the deck a little bit for the Mariners. It was taking on more money for 2024. For the Giants, it was just kind of spreading it out over the next couple of years.
Yeah, definitely a financial and financial motivation in terms of, like you said, reshuffling the deck. So Logan Webb has had a pretty typical Webb-like season. So his ERA might be a tad higher than where it was last year, but he's still in the mid-threes. He's about to hit 200 innings again. He's allowed fewer home runs, a little bit more walks, but he led baseball in innings pitched last year and leads baseball in that category, at least heading into today, 921. So yeah, Logan Webb, all-star. We found out why he didn't have the greatest all-star appearance, but I mean, whatever, it's exhibition. So, you know, a little bit too much fun, I guess, in Texas. But I mean, he's got to be, you know, at least one of the bright spots, right, in terms of just being reliable, being, I mean, he's out there, he's leading baseball again in innings pitched, and he is got a nice ERA, doing what you would want him to do, really.
Yeah, I mean, it's been another positive season for him. He's established himself as a workhorse in baseball. I think he's probably, you know, I'm doing this based off of memory, probably since about 2022, since the start of 2022. I think he's made every single start, and I think he also leads baseball in innings pitched. So it's not just one year. It's the fact that he's thrown so many innings over the past few years that adds to his value. And he's been quite good this year. I think he's dealing with some fatigue down the stretch, although I don't know if he'll ever admit to it, because he's just kind of got that competitor workhorse mindset. But, you know, when you start looking at these numbers, 32 starts, 33 starts, 32 starts over the past couple of years, averaging 200 innings, I mean, that's got to catch up to you at some point. But he continues to compete out there. His last couple, I mean, he really hasn't been all that good in September, but really for the first 5 months of the year, he was probably a top five Cy Young contender in the NL. He's fallen out of that at this point, but really nice year. He's very much one of the leaders for the Giants, somebody who's, you know, trying to paint a nice picture of San Francisco, because that's just the dynamic that the Giants have to battle with free agents right now.
Yeah, I mean, and then as far as another free agent that I would say the signing has worked out pretty well for them was Matt Chapman, and, you know, him and Patrick Bailey are among the league leaders in defensive runs saved. They both have 19 at their position. Bailey, I mean, it looks like according to Baseball Savant, he's basically leading baseball in, you know, pitch framing. And you mentioned, what was it that he was also?
Baseball perspectives, catcher, defensive added. I like that stat because it really tries to combine blocking, framing, and throwing into one number that's like kind of quantifiable. And I mean, it's not like a baseball savant number. It's not like a number that Fangraphs uses, I don't think. But, you know, it's just another metric to kind of highlight how good a catcher is.
Matt Chapman, and offensively, he's been doing pretty, I would say, pretty decent in, you know, that kind of a stadium. I mean, Oracle Park is, we know it's not a hitter's park, really, or home run hitting park. What have you thought? He signed a 6-year deal with the Giants, I believe.
Yep. 6 years, $151 million. Yep. So, I mean, he pretty much, the Blue Jays tried to negotiate an extension before he reached free agency a couple of years ago. That's pretty much the contract that he was offered. So he pretty much got the Blue Jays were going to offer anyway. I think there's a good chance he was going to see at least 5 years and $25 million, in the neighborhood of $25 million average annual value in free agency this year. I think the overpay might have been the sixth year. But, you know, this is a guy who takes really good care of himself. You know, he's one of the more durable players in baseball. I think he's going to reach 150 games this year. You know, he's just a guy who's in the lineup every day and really enjoys that fact, being so damn reliable. His defense has been as advertised. Pretty good chance that he wins a Gold Glove, his fifth, if he wins a Gold Glove this year. So there isn't a lot to dislike about Matt Chapman. His offense has definitely rebounded a little bit. He's an excellent base runner. He's fast. There was a really good story that was put out after the Chapman extension by Sports Info Solutions. And it was like saying that Chapman's one of the most well-rounded, if not the most well-rounded player in baseball, because he just contributes on a daily basis, defensively, base running, offensively, and just being available. And, you know, there's certainly other guys who you can make a case for that. This is not to say that he's the best player in baseball, but just somebody who has that well-rounded skill set who contributes to winning in a bunch of different ways. So obviously well-deserved contract. I think the next step is how he and Webb can help kind of build that core going forward, because, you know, Chapman's going to be under contract for the next 6 years. Webb is under contract for the next few years. You know, how do they build off of that and build something? Like, can Chapman recruit somebody in free agency? I think that's kind of the next step, because he's essentially becoming the face of the franchise along with Webb at this point.
Yeah, and then Patrick Bailey. I mean, you guys had the Joey Bart experiment, and I think you're all happy with Patrick Bailey now, right?
Well, Joey Bart's been hitting the crap out of the ball with Pittsburgh, so there's a...
That's true.
You know, I think Patrick Bailey's the better all-around player. I mean, he's the more valuable catcher, due in large part to his defense, his framing ability. You know, he's an excellent... excellent thrower. He's one of the quickest guys out of the crouch. But there's still that missed opportunity with Joey Bart. The Giants really made a mistake calling him up in 2020, because that started his option clock. And the reason they had to trade him is because he was essentially out of options this year, and he started the year on the roster, but there was no role for him. So, you know, obviously it's bittersweet, because, you know, Bart has found, you know, a really good landing spot with the Pirates, and he's proven to look like a foundational player for them. But on a positive note, the Giants have a pretty good catcher with Patrick Bailey, and it was going to be hard for those guys to coexist. I think the part that really hurts is that a power hitting catcher like Bart would have netted a huge return on the trade market if he had been able to build up some track record. That didn't happen. But, you know, if you look at how he's performing now, it's like, man, if you could have traded that guy instead of the guy who was out of options that they pretty much had to move 6 months ago, they would have got a huge return for that, because he's pre-arbitration. You know, he's still relatively young. He hits for power. He plays a premium position. You know, you add those things all up, I mean, you could have got a pretty nice return for him. Instead, they got a 2023 eighth round pick for him. So, a little bit of a disappointment there. It's a good thing that they have Patrick Bailey, because it would have been a colossal mistake if they didn't have a replacement in place.
Oh, yeah. Well, I guess if they didn't have Bailey, though, maybe Bart would still be on the team, though, because
he might be,
you know. So a few more things. So Jordan Hicks, he's been starting. He's been coming out of the bullpen. He just ended up on the IL, and I saw this per Alex Pavlovich of the NBC Sports Bay Area, who said yesterday that he was one out away from earning an additional $83,333 as part of an innings-based incentives because he's on the IL. So that's got to suck, obviously. But what do you think about this year he's had? This was his first year ever starting games, right? So did a little bit of both. But yeah, what's your view on, or what do you grade him this season?
Yeah, I mean, there were certainly some promising signs for him. I think he had a 2.7 ERA through the first 2 months of the year, but there was always going to be a threshold in terms of workload that the Giants knew that he was going to cross at some point as a starter. He had never thrown more than 77.2 innings in a season. He came up as a starter in the minors, so it wasn't totally new territory for him. But since he debuted in the majors, he had never thrown more than 77.2 innings. So I think the Giants knew that when they signed him, it was like, hey, you know, at best, I think you might make 20 to 22 starts this year, and then we'll finish there in the bullpen. And that's kind of what happened. But after the first 2 months, he really got close to that 77.2 threshold again. And that's when fatigue started to kick in, and his performance really declined quickly after that. So, you know, I think there were definitely positive signs for him this year. The Giants are going to probably bring him back into the rotation next year. There's probably always going to be some type of relatively low ceiling in terms of how many starts and innings pitched he's going to make. I think in a perfect world, it's 25 starts and maybe 125 innings out of the rotation. But that's something that he has to build up to. But with the contract that he signed, I really don't like investing heavily in a bullpen because it just doesn't pay off. So it's fine because it's not a prohibitive amount. But when you start looking at, like, you know, next year's next year's team. It's like you have Taylor Rogers making $11 million out of the bullpen, and then maybe Jordan Hicks also making $11 million. That's not a smart investment in my opinion. But if he's back in the rotation, then he's probably, you know, he'll probably end up doing fine. His fastball velocity really fluctuated throughout the year, so I know this is a guy who's thrown close to 100 plus out of the bullpen, but it went from like 98 through his first couple of starts to about like 92 to 95 as the season wore on. So just I think the Giants hope that he can just build up more arm strength to be able to pitch, to be able to maintain his velocity throughout the season, because that just didn't happen this year. So again, there were some promising signs for him, especially early on, but once he reached that like career high threshold, it really started to, you know, his numbers really started to take a dip pretty quickly. So, you know, it's an experiment, but I think the Giants like what they saw, and they'll probably go back to it next year.
So we'll end on this. The Giants, you know, they've been linked to plenty of high profile players like your guy, Aaron Judge. Aaron Judge. you know, they're, I think, you know, I don't know how, I mean, we all know Tani was never going to leave LA or the LA area, but for whatever, we'd hear his name out there. I'm sure we're going to hear him, them linked, or I think we've already seen articles, you know, linking them potentially to Juan Soto. So, I mean, you know, they're always kind of linked to these high profile type of players and free agents, but I would imagine Juan Soto stays with the Yankees. We'll see, who knows, but I think he's going to stay there. But I mean, what kind of, you know, if you were the GM of the Giants, not like you can say what you think they might do. Actually, yeah, tell me what you think they'll do, but also really though, what would you do if you were trying to fix this team realistically heading into next season, even if it didn't mean that you were going to land a Juan Soto, but you would at least try to make that work, right? I mean, he's Juan Soto or someone like that, Corbin Burns, whoever.
Yeah, I think they have to try, unfortunately. And, you know, if recent history, I mean, like, I don't know if you know this about the Giants, but they just have swung and missed on many, many top free agents. It's not just Aaron Judge. It's not just Shohei Ohtani. It's Giancarlo Stanton. It's John Lester, who went to the Cubs. And then it goes back even further than that. Guys like Carlos Lee and Alfonso Soriano. They have a pretty good track record of targeting some of the top names in the market and really having nothing to show for it. So I think, unfortunately, they kind of have to try and land Juan Soto. I don't think Soto's leaving New York, whether that's with the Mets or with the Yankees. I can't envision it. I don't know if the Dodgers are going to be in play given how much money they've committed to other players.
Yeah.
They're probably going to be in play. I mean, why wouldn't they be? They're the Dodgers. They're printing money at this point. There's only a handful of teams where they could realistically, where Juan Soto can realistically land. The Giants are one of them. So their name's going to be leveraged in free agency. I don't think he's going to land with them. But I mean, to your point, to fix the roster, I mean, they really just need a major roster overhaul at this point. They can't bring back the same guys and say, hey, let's try this again, you know, for better results. They need to look at the positions that they can upgrade, you know, probably at least one corner outfielder, first base, second base, a DH. I mean, they really have a few spots where that are open, I think, that they need to look in free agency to upgrade. Would not be surprised to see him tied to guys like Willie Adames and Ha-Seong Kim. Ha-Seong Kim is pretty close to Jung-Hoo Lee. And Kim knows Bob Melvin from, you know, managing the Padres, of course. So there's going to be some connection there. They need a pretty drastic lineup overhaul. They could target a pitcher in free agency. I don't think they're going to, unless it's somebody like Blake Snell. I just think that they have enough pitching options to where it's not a need necessarily. But if you're targeting a guy like Blake Snell, it's obviously a want. It's not like, hey, we only have two guys heading into next year's rotation who are penciled in. They have a couple of guys. They have a few different options. They have, of course, Logan Webb. Robbie Ray is going to be in that mix if he decides to stay. Hayden Birdsong has looked good and shown flashes. Kyle Harrison has looked good and shown flashes. They're going to be relying on those guys. And then there's also the fact that you just can't build a rotation through free agency. It's really tough to do. And I should take a step back and say you can't do it. it's tough to do because, you know, if you're signing some of the top guys in the market, I mean, that's going to be 25 million at least to those pitchers. So it's like, it's not just signing one guy who's owed 25 million. It's like, well, you already have Robbie Ray making 25 million. You have Logan Webb making 20 million or something in that neighborhood. You have to have the young guys also prove what they can do at some point. You just can't go out and buy a rotation in free agency. It's really tough to do, and it's something that's really, you know, the downstream effect of having those guys under contract a few years down the road can be pretty brutal. And you see teams like maybe the Washington Nationals, they've had to deal with that with guys like Patrick Corbin, unfortunately, with guys like Steven Strasburg. You know, it's just there's a downstream effect there that I think the Giants want to avoid. So I think they really need to target the lineup to improve it.
Yeah, we'll see how we'll see what the Giants end up doing as they finish up the season here in the next week. Before I let you go, so today CJ Abrams made news for his I guess breaking curfew in Chicago on the Nats road trip with the you know against the Cubs, and I guess he was, you know, gambling or betting or, you know, doing whatever, gambling at a casino or doing something. So anyway, shout out to CJ Abrams. I got his bobblehead at Bobblehead Day or whatever for him when the Cubs were at the Nats like last month, and his you could take his left arm off, and he's got like let's see, he's got in this hand he's holding his sunglasses, and this other arm you can put, you know, put this arm in there, and he's carrying his shoes. So anyways, and isn't that a crazy story though?
Is he not holding cards in that without bobblehead or like dice or anything like that? Like, a casino game.
Yeah, I know.
Funny.
That's the funny thing. This bobblehead is not your standard like baseball player looking bobblehead. It's kind of like, you know, he's hanging out, he's doing his thing. He's got a backpack on. It is kind of funny, like after that kind of a story break. So he's going down to the minors basically to as punishment for the rest of the, you know, the last week of the season. AAA is pretty much over, and so he's like their best player too, or you know, one of their better players. So it's an interesting story.
It's funny. I mean, I can just say from my experience, it's like I'm not gonna sit here and shame a guy for being out at a casino as a 23-year-old all-star, a guy who's probably going to make millions of and millions of dollars in his career. Because when I was 23, I was also probably at the casinos, losing money in the blackjack tables. That was always my game. So it's a, I mean, it's obviously the Nationals are trying to send a message, saying, "Hey, you're kind of the leader of our team. We expect you to, you know, be more of a role model to the organization." Which is not being out until 8 in the morning at the casino, which I get that. I again, just from like personal experience, it's hard for me to be like, don't do that.
So you're a big gambler, huh?
I mean, I was at that point, not anymore, but there's a casino down the street from where I live, and I'm like, I haven't even walked in there, which is kind of funny because that would not have been me at that age. If I was CJ Abrams, I'd probably be at the casino. So again, like it's you know, I get what the Nationals are doing. On the other hand, I can understand Abrams wanting to have a good time. Like it's he's
Yeah.
young, you know, he's I don't
Yeah,
know.
Chicago's a
They're
great town.
yeah, it's a fun town.
Have you been to Chicago?
Once before, I went to Dodgers Cubs playoff game in 2017.
Oh,
Yeah,
yeah. I felt like you
yeah,
told me that.
yeah.
What were you?
Dodgers beat them by like it was like a 10-0 game or something like that. They beat them pretty
Yeah.
badly.
What were you doing in Chicago that day?
So there was like a conference that was taking place. I wrote a paper that got published, and I came to talk about that paper. So that's just happened to be a coincidence that the Cubs were playing the Dodgers in the playoffs in Chicago. So I got one ticket, kind of really enjoyed downtown Chicago, got to stop off at a couple cool little pubs before I went to the game. So that was a fun experience.
That is cool. Well, Jeff, thanks for taking some time to chat about the Giants. I mean, I think if you and most Giants fans, you know, were bargained with, hey, we'll give you 3 World Series in, you know, a 5-year span, but then you're going to be mediocre for about, you know, 7 or 8 years. I think you'd take that, right?
I can die a happy person. I've seen the Warriors win 4. I've seen the Giants win 3. It's really not that bad.
It's got to be tough, though. I mean, you got, you know, the Warriors trying to, step it up again. The Giants got to step it up. The Niners got to get back to the Super Bowl and win it this time. It's got to be tough being a San Francisco sports fan.
You think so. And of course, like, it's been a long time since the Giants were relevant in baseball. I mean, we're talking, you know, they were in the playoffs in 2016. They were really good in 2021, but there's been a lot of lean years in between us. It's not something the Giants can really, as an organization, hang their hat on. For the Warriors, I mean, they're still Steph Curry. There's still always that chance. They won a couple of years ago, so it hasn't been that long.
Yep.
Of course, the Niners can't beat Patrick Mahomes in the Super Bowl, which, you know, many teams can't. So it's, you know, it's, you just kind of have to maybe not tip your cap. They just need a little more luck to fall in there. In their favor for that to happen. Hopefully it happens. I mean, it's a shame because, you know, they went 5-0 in the Super Bowl in the 80s and 90s. They've lost 3 straight Super Bowls since then.
Yep.
That's tough to digest. So hopefully they can pull it out. But, you know, I've seen 3 World Series. I've seen 4 NBA World Championships. Again, like, I never in my life envisioned that the Warriors were going to go on this meteoric rise and become a historically great team. Like, they were so bad for the first 15 years of me watching them. They were an afterthought. They were awful. They couldn't draft. No one wanted to play there. They were the joke of the NBA. So for them to go from like that to 4 championships in like 7 years, like, I can die a happy person.
And to set the record straight, I was definitely being sarcastic when I was like, oh, it's got to be tough being a San Francisco sports fan. But,
yeah. But no, I knew that.
I know you did. Yeah. I just want to set the record straight. But yeah, I think most people would take it. It is kind of funny how certain, you know, sports cities, it's like all of a sudden it's like a cluster of championships or championship appearances. I mean, Florida has had that with the Lightning and the Florida Panthers, and the Rays won the World Series. The Buccaneers won the Super Bowl not that long ago. LA Lakers, Dodgers, you know, their 2020 runs. You've got the San Francisco area. So it is kind of funny when these clusters of these towns just kind of have success all at once.
Yeah. It's always hard to predict. It's always hard to, you know what goes into that. I mean, really, it just probably comes down to luck. You just need the stars to align and, you know, add the right guys, draft the right guys, and that could really turn multiple organizations around. I mean, you see it happen. I mean, think about how many victories that area has had with the Patriots, the Red Sox, the Flyers. I think they've won, you know, a Stanley Cup in the past couple
Decades. They haven't won since
Boston,
like
the Bruins, 16th. Right?
Yeah, the Bruins. Yeah, the Bruins.
They haven't won anything?
No, they did. They won their cup in 2011. Yeah.
That's right.
And when you said the Flyers, I thought you were going to say the Celtics. I don't think you mentioned the Celtics.
Them too. Yeah.
Yeah, it all blends together on the East Coast out here. But
they're pretty much New York.
Yeah, pretty much. Well, again, thanks for hopping on. And we'll chat some postseason or something soon.
All right, sounds good. Yeah, thanks for having me on.
One.